Welcome back, everybody, to Vital's Bee Practice Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Tanner Stevens and Dakota Norton. As usual, we have a new guest, though. Dylan Lamar is joining us, who is the team manager for the Commensal USA downhill team. Thank you for being here, Dylan.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man. We originally were going to kind of blow through some things that have happened between the last podcast and this one, and then have you jump on and chat. But I mean, if you're not in any time crunch, I have just kind of like a list of random things. Cool, man.
I'll just hang out here. I got a pretty view looking at Trestle Bike Park right now in the lobby, so I'm chilling.
Hell yeah. Well, hey, what can you disclose what you were shooting photos of today?
So it's like a photo and video shoot that we do every year for Trestle, that they use for all of their, like, the next season's ads, posters around the bike park, trail maps, social media, all that stuff. So we usually shoot it this time of year, just since all the fall leaves are turning and all that looks really cool here. So usually not as dry and dusty this time of year here. So yeah, that's kind of what we're doing up here. Nice 4:30 alarm clock this morning to drive up here and do it.
Got to get those sunrise shots.
Got to.
Did you, were you riding or were you shooting?
Riding.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, I mean, we got to kick off this week with Dakota's 15 grand richer after winning the US Open. The boy did it.
Dude.
Happening.
Yeah. Wow. You're coming out to SoCal and we're going to teach you to surf. We're going to just hang out a bunch. You're going to buy all the dinners. When's that happening?
I'm buying.
You're buying.
I thought when you won things to celebrate, your friends did nice things for you when you have like significant life events that occur.
Hey, Dakota, if it wasn't for us, you wouldn't even be here right now.
That's true. I'd probably still be lost with no wallet at National Champs in Mammoth, just still trying to figure out how I was going to get home.
Team effort.
Yeah. This has been a long time coming for this 15 grand.
Run us through the weekend. I mean, like, obviously we thought there was a high chance you could win, but did you expect it? Like, how'd it go? I mean, it rained for race day. It looked like, you know, a lot of stuff happened.
Between Luca and Jackson, I was tripping. I'm like, why these fast dudes got to show up? No, man. Jackson was obviously riding that high hype off the weekend before where he won hardline, so that was pretty sick for him. And so it was like setting up to be a pretty good week of race, and you know, between him and me and Lucas, you know, back from injury, so there's plenty of other super fast dudes there. So yeah, man, it was a good weekend. We did a little bit too much drinking, so it was a little bit laid back, you know. Hung out with the Fox crew. My girlfriend had a hotel with them, so we were doing a little party in the first half of the week and then got down to business. Looked like we were going to get rained on the top dudes, and they moved the race forward on race day, which was a clutch decision from Clay. And we were sitting up there warming up. We kept getting delayed, and literally halfway through my race run, it let go. So it was raining on Luca at the bottom, and then when I got to the jumps halfway down the track, it was like super wet, and I was like, oh baby, just get me home. Luckily most of the track was in the woods, so, and got the job done, man. It's pretty cool. That's a race that I never really thought I would, wasn't on like the bucket list or anything, you know. Just it's cool to do it, you know. Didn't think that would happen.
Heck yeah. No, that's sweet. Well, there was like a small delay in you guys racing and me seeing results. And I was like, man, I really hope he won. A, so you can hopefully get some stuff done on your house. And B, I was like, finally, another SoCal Dakota road trip or flight trip is happening. Yeah. It's been a minute since you've been out here.
Well, you know, Freddie, the Hardy installer, hit me with a 12 grand labor for the siding. So I'm going to need that 15.
Did you tell him that you just won a race and got a bunch of money or anything?
No, dude, he hit me with a, I was like, hey man, what's it going to cost to do this? And he's like beating around the bush telling me, and I'm like, oh, here it comes. He's about to he's about to send this quote to the moon. $12,000 just in labor. I'm like, so you're going to tell me that putting siding on my house is going to cost me $22,000.
Oh my
you,
gosh.
Sir, are out of control. So, I guess it's all getting spent in one place.
Dang. I was
anyone in Eastern Tennessee that wants to sponsor Dakota with a siding install.
Help a player out with the Howard Hardy. You know, I'm getting sick of looking at Tyvek on my house. Pull up.
otherwise it's gonna be Norton siding out there for the next few weeks.
Dude, Norton siding. It would take me 3 weeks to put Hardy on this thing by myself. Can you see me and Frida out there both in slides trying to lift the panel up like scratch, you know, like with dad holding the you're pointing the flashlight in the wrong place.
Yeah, right.
Frida's
yeah,
got the nail gun.
If racing ends early, you can always fall back on that in Dakota side.
Dude, I'm like quit racing with the price of Hardy insulation these days.
Yeah, sure.
I'm in the wrong business. But yeah, man, we've made lots of jokes about buying a roof with the U.S. Open money, but I guess it's siding money. We ain't even to the roof yet. What a time! But super grateful, man. Like Clay put on a heck of an event. There was a little bit of an issue with the timing, but they ended up getting it all sorted and got the times figured out before finals, and everything ran smooth in finals. The track was great for the grade they have there. The track crew, Rosie was up and down the track with a shovel all weekend doing coursework. And I just thought it was, for what they had, they did a really good job. And it was a really fun event. So if you guys didn't get the chance to go this year, support the people that are supporting the sport and putting on good events and paying good prize money and, you know, slalom, whip off the whole deal, get up there. It's a super fun time.
Yeah. For sure. Did Clay mention if the plan is already to do it at Killington again next year?
Yeah, they seem to want it, and they seem to be pushing to keep that event and to grow it. So we might be needing skis next year after the season, but we'll see.
I raced the Open in 2018 there when they tried to make the course at the very top of the gondola, and that track was pretty gnarly and kind of like it worked, but it was an effort to stretch it all the way across. So I was stoked to see them run the GRT course we've done. Well, we will figure out when your trip is happening out here in the coming months. We got time. There's no rush, but stoked you're, you know, you can not bitch about money for at least like a month or so.
Like 2 weeks.
2 weeks. There you go. All right. One more thing for you, Dak. I saw old Hefe Stieber posted on his story some frames, pieces of frames. You guys got a new bike coming?
Bro, we're pulling up. We're taking everything we learned from the, I don't even know what they call this thing. I think it's the 279 HP1. And dude, we're showing up with the next one. It's gonna be sick. I'm super, super excited. No longer going to be jet skiing down the track with the gravy boat. the hull.
I mean, at least you didn't have to bring a water bottle with you. You could just fill that bitch up and there you go. You got hydration on the ride.
It's like drinking out of the trough and Morzine. No, dude, we're taking everything we learned and we have a new project that I'm super excited about. We took a bunch of feedback we had and we got a new frame coming. So the goal was to have it by the US Open, but that didn't really happen. So they're doing like some structural testing on it right now, doing all the fatigue stuff. And then, we should get it in the next few weeks here and then I get to ride it. So I'll have some news on that.
Dang, sweet. Is it a similar layout to what you guys have been riding, or like how drastically different is it?
It's similar. Okay. It's still gonna have a idler and a high-ish pivot. Yeah, but some other of the bars will be changing.
So it's
pretty cool. I'm really excited. No, it's good, dude. It's going to be super cool. I think we can talk about it, but I don't really know. So I'm just going to like push you guys off another week. It's coming. Here we go. I'll talk about it once it's out. I don't think they're really trying to hide anything, but I think they're trying to, as soon as they get it like all welded up and we ride it, they're going to post it. So
cool. That'll be exciting. Well, if you can just give me like a real rough sketch that I can post in the forums, that would be great for me.
Well, he's confirmed it's not carbon.
It's true. No carbon, no lugs. So there's that.
Nope. And I think as long as everything goes well with it, with this bike, I mean, as long as we ride it, we're happy, everything, it's going to be able to be purchased, I think, as long as we're happy with it. So just cool. Yeah. It's cool to like go through the whole R&D process with a company that's not afraid to make it look like dudes that go faster than the majority of people riding in the world should ride the same linkage as everyone in the rest of the world, you know? Like, it's like, this is for racing, and we're trying to make the best bike possible for racing, and that's cool. That's like to go through the whole works process and be so open about it.
Sweet.
Sick.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's funny because a lot of people, well, Spomer, and then a lot of other people who saw you guys were going to make a new bike were like, they're going so fast on the current one. Like, why would they change it up? Why would they do that? But it sounds like it's more an evolution of where you guys are at versus a completely new starting point. So, which makes sense, right? I don't know why people just assume you guys would like throw everything to the side and start fresh, but yeah. Well, I have a few notes about some things here. I mean, one of them was that like the EWS season wrapped up at Loudonville, and that is that location also got announced as where they'll have an EWS and downhill doubleheader next year, which I thought was noteworthy. But then looking at the schedule, I swear Leo Gang is one that they have an EWS downhill and XCO at. So like, I don't know if they're just hyping up Loudonville because it's new for downhill or what the reason was, but I mean,
well, it originally wasn't on the calendar.
I guess that's what it was. It was like a to be determined location. Mm-hmm. So,
Did determine it. We're going racing somewhere new,
but I think there's still another France location that hasn't been announced. So, you know, which cool. A, stoked to see new locations, but B, I mean, we've kind of touched on a few past podcasts doing multiple events in one, but like, I'm all down for there to be downhill and an enduro and XCO and all that stuff. Like, it reminds me of what Crankworx Whistler's like, assuming they can make it like a week long and they're not trying to pack shit into Thursday to Sunday, but I don't know. It sounds neat. Although, I mean, we don't need to go down the route of like sending all the enduro dudes down the downhill track. I don't think they're going to do that.
Don't start with me. Yeah, I'm going to get a bad name.
Yeah, and then like Ed Masters and those dudes like possibly not being able to race one of the events.
That's true, but that's like what, under 10 dudes that will have to make that choice, and they already do a few times throughout the season with conflicting events on weekends. But and I would have to bet like an Ed Masters and Matt Walker go into a World Series every time because they're quite a bit more successful in that.
I think it's sweet for a spectator you know, talking point. There'll be action happening the whole, you know, if you're like on the side of the track for the downhill and then you can scoot over and watch an enduro stage and you know what I mean? It's just not, there's more going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'd have to imagine too, like a pit situation where, I mean, at least World Cups a few years ago when I went, they're pretty team focused, right? There isn't as much consumer focused pit set up to draw people there. Whereas if there's all of, you know, say you have three genres of cycling happening at once, there's more reason for brands to see it, maybe like a Crankworx event, and actually be there and give a draw for people. And I think for Discovery, it's got to make way more financial sense to do all those things at once. So there's that too. Do you guys watch any Approving Grounds?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
What you got for us? Give us a low.
I mean, I just skimmed through the live broadcast replay they did, which first of all was super good, I thought. Mm-hmm. It was really, I didn't even realize that they were covering it like that. And they've kind of partnered with, I'm only drawing a blank, the snowboard.
Yeah.
What is it called? What is natural selection?
Yeah, natural selection. Yes. Yeah.
So
Travis Rice's series.
Yes. Natural selection, which is the snowboard kind of version of it, which is an awesome series that gets put on every winter, is sort of partnered with it. And you could kind of feel that vibe in the production that they put out from it. But it, I mean, the takeaway I had is it was really cool to see established free ride dudes, up and coming free ride dudes, and then a lot of free ride women all in one place. And like, sort of like Red Bull Imagination, the moto event that happened the other weekend, there was equal focus put on like a handful of days of a jam session and like a progression session. And then on top of that, the final day was like a contest, but that wasn't the only focus, you know, like not everybody there was just trying to win. Most people there were just hyped to be a part of something going on, which I'm down for. I think that's what free rides needed.
Like, it was kind of like a fest series meets Rampage or slope contest.
Yeah.
Free ride needs that.
Dylan Stark was on the podium.
Yeah.
He's my wild card pick for Rampage.
Wild card pick for life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Loose unit.
I was just about to say that dude is a absolute loose unit. I'm interested to see what he does at Rampage, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm afraid for him.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it, but yeah, a little bit. Cause I've spoken to a few of the other riders. Cause we have, as Colin's like, we have four riders in there, and I've spoken to a few other guys as well. And there's a few guys in there that hasn't really had much experience out there. And like, when you go out there, I mean, that place is, it's a completely different world.
Dude, he's and, gnarly. I'm just afraid of him him. Like, he's going to come up with some, I'm excited to see what he does. Like, crazy respect for how gnarly the dude is. But also, he is, like, I feel like he's like Raha in the sense that he's like not afraid. And he will send it, and I'm pumped to see it. But dude, he's gnarly. So you put him in that environment with that pressure and those people, we're gonna be in for a show, and I'm excited to see it. Yeah. But also a little afraid for him.
I think he's one of those dudes too that has maybe taken like a different avenue as a professional, you know, and he's super talented, but maybe hasn't always been given the credit he's due. And the fact that I can just imagine in his mind, he's like, I'm finally like where he knows he can be on like a world stage of an event, which makes it even more terrifying for me that he's going to fucking like try to double back for a 40-foot drop, you know, like, cause he
here's one for you. Has he ever rode down anything that steep before?
I would think so.
He's done some gnarly staircases.
I've ridden with him a little bit over the years. And I know like Lear Miller kind of grew up racing with Dylan a little bit. And he actually has like a downhill racing background. Yeah, like he's not just free ride or BMX. Like I think he'll be fine. I mean, compared to maybe say some of the other dirt jump free ride focused guys, I think he's just as capable. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of how like Barage was when he showed up at Rampage. It's like that dude who's got like a little bit extra X factor or unknown of like what they're gonna do that makes it really exciting.
Yeah, I think he just like has a big chip on his shoulder, it seems like, with like everything he does, releasing like the 420 part that was like $3 to watch or whatever. It was like kind of seemed like he had a chip on his shoulder and just like wanted to prove himself and like kind of F you to the industry almost.
Dude, he's so gnarly. Everything he does is gnarly.
Dude, he's gnarly. He's straight up gnarly. So much respect for that dude. Gnarly.
Yeah. Dylan, Tanner said that saying it, but you've dug at Rampage, haven't you?
No, so I actually dug at Formation. Yeah, the women's event. Yeah, so I dug for Samantha Soriano there, and then how it kind of combined with like Casey Brown and a few other ladies on their line. So
sick. Okay, rad. I was just wondering, like, with somebody like Dylan Stark, someone like him with his first time at Rampage, I always hear about the kind of politics involved with picking a line and guys from past years that already have their line established. And it'll be interesting how much creativity he kind of is allowed to have with all of that stuff that goes on too.
Yeah. And I know there's, I mean, if you're going back to like a previous site that was used that year prior. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of, you know, this is my line, like stay off of it, I'm not sharing it kind of a thing. But they're going back to an older site that hasn't been used in a long time, as far as I know. So it'll be interesting to see a lot of the guys that obviously like some, cause you go out there when all those lines are still there, people still ride them and like rough them in, but it'll be interesting to see that kind of that dynamic of choosing lines with obviously kind of like Kyle Strait with, you know, the veteran side, Andreu, and then with the new guys of, you know, Dylan Stark and a few other ones, to kind of how they're going to pick and choose.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. Rampage is one that I'm always nervous to watch. I'm excited for, but I'm equal parts nervous.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And I'll be there like mechanic for Kyle and Deej and them. And even being that down there at the bottom, the places, it's just when a rider drops in, everyone just, the entire valley just goes silent. Mm-hmm. Just because you just don't know what's about to happen, which partly makes the event, you know, what it is and the high, you know, the high caliber it has. And then the other side of it is just like, holy crap, like this is absolutely insanity right now. Like, so it's nuts, and you're just like hoping the like the bikes and bodies just make it down.
Yeah, well, so if you're, have you wrenched for your riders in the past at that event?
Yeah, the past 2 years I've kind of been Kyle's mechanic, and he SRAM is out there as well, so they take care of a lot of stuff, and then I'm just kind of there for the oh crap moments. Like I build up his spare frame, basically his spare bike. I build all that up to have it, you know, just in case if something happens last minute, then we have the spare ready to go.
Yeah.
Just cause I mean, that's a big boy coming down a lot of big jumps down there. So
what
it's a lot of force going in.
Is there anything in particular, like, I mean, on Kyle's bike or even any of those dudes' bikes, you do to like make them bomb proof?
Extra welds, adding material.
Yeah, I know we should, man. Honestly, not too much. Nothing out of the ordinary goes into it, really. Really, with Kyle, he runs always like as thick of casing tires as he can, just for how harsh those landings are, just so it holds from rolling. And outside of that, nothing too crazy, honestly.
I heard Broggy just takes his frame, just drills everything out, and puts 8mm hardware through every bolt in it, every pivot. Like just full on hardware store bolts through everything in his frames because he bends them all the time.
Just takes it to Home Depot and just,
dude, literally
all the backup bolts. Just
drills it through and tosses one through.
Holy
How
God.
Gnarly, dude, is that? I was at the bottom of when the drop that he did, that he broke his collarbone on. I was like on next to the landing when that happened, and the noise that made whenever he hit was insane. I still have it on my phone. I filmed it.
Oh my God.
It was, yeah, it's nuts. You stand on top of it and it just doesn't make sense. And there was actually a kid not long ago that went out there and hit it.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know who he is, but it was like,
dude, on a specialized status, I think a quick release rear end.
No way. Yeah.
Straight up.
That's sick. It's frightening, but so.
I always. You know, you're mentioning how they're going to a past venue where there's still lines that exist from whenever they're there before. And I trip out now how, I mean, Freeride's had a pretty good like resurgence and it's quite popular, but especially in that part of the world. And like, I just can only like, it seems like it's gonna be so hard for them to find a section of hill that hasn't already been torn apart from either having the event there or just other people going out and camping and building Freeride lines. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And last year they went back to, I forget what year they had it, but you know, when like Kyle and Cam had that insane shoot from the top, and Kyle was telling me he was hoping he was going to never have to do that again. But then, you know, you just, like you said, there's only so much terrain you can work with. So they had basically kind of revived their line of years past and just kind of made some different changes down below. But yeah, I kind of agree. It's interesting to see what they'll do and kind of make it a bit different. Because I think this year the site, it had a lot of wooden features before. So maybe, I think it had like the Oakley cinder and all that crazy stuff whenever that year was. So maybe without all the wood, kind of opens up a little bit more diversity in it.
That was, I went in 2013 and watched, and that's where it was. So... probably maybe like 2013 or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's that same site, I believe.
Wow. Dylan's just pulling weight on the Rampage knowledge right now. We would have been lost without that.
I got you.
OG, yeah. Dude. OG.
You know, it never ceases to impress me. I make these kind of half-ass notes, and then we always end up getting some value out of our talks.
It works out.
Yeah, you know, it does work out. Only other note I have is that since the last time we did this, I put out Vital's downhill bike test sessions, and I'm really just plugging Vital right now because it was a ton of work to produce. And so if you haven't gone to watch it, please go watch it. We tested a Canfield Jedi, a New Proof Descent, a Propane Rage, and a Mondraker Summum. I was going to see what you guys would pick if you like wanted to have one of those bikes, but it's a bit of a cheesy question.
I'd go with the New Proof.
New Proof. I mean, New Proof was sick. I would, if I was going to go race and I was going to go buy a bike off the shelf that isn't a common saw, I would go buy the New Proof.
I like that comment.
If I were to buy a bike that isn't a Scott Gambler.
I mean, I feel like Dakota would have to ride the Canfield because it looks the most like his bike right now.
I can't speak on this topic. I don't think I'm actually allowed. Sorry, I'm fresh out. I've actually never rode a Jedi, the Propane, or a Nuke Proof. What's the other one?
A Mondraker.
Haven't rode that either. I can't speak on it.
I mean,
never rode
any. I was hoping you would, but I figured you couldn't.
Very PC of you.
Mm-hmm. No, dude, I was stoked on the bikes we got because most people haven't ridden those bikes, right? I mean, we could have had a Giant Glory, a Specialized Demo, and a Canyon Sender, but you can go read 1,000 reviews on those bikes.
Yeah, and Propane, they're really starting to push pretty hard in the States. I think they got a like a new warehouse distribution center. I think it's in Washington, if I believe.
I think.
Yep. I believe so. Yeah, it you know, we went for this whole idea of we're gonna race test bikes, and then on the first day of practice, one of our testers fell and got hurt, and that kind of took away the whole concept because you can't have three people race four bikes. So it's something that we're going to have to do again next year and actually make happen all the way, because people, I mean, I was stoked on the idea when I came up with it, because I'm like, this will be way more fun than just talking about bikes. And even though that's kind of what it turned into, I think it'll be fun to eventually actually race a test bike. Cause that's what downhill bikes are, right? They're more or less, they're always a race bike, and all of these bikes in the marketing info forum was somewhere it said race ready bike. So yeah. Maybe next year we'll get a common saw in there. There was an email thread somewhere along the line.
Yeah. Hey, well, maybe I'll put in a good word for you.
By that time, I don't know what version we'll be on, but we'll get a
6.9.
Who knows? Maybe by 10 we'll be like V7, V8, V9. Who knows? One of the Vs. We're getting up to the V10s now. So
that's true. I say you're gonna have to skip V10 probably.
Yeah, just straight to V11.
Mm-hmm. It's like the iPhone.
It is.
Go VX. Yeah.
So true.
All right. Let's go and transition, and we'll hound you for some questions about being a team manager, Dylan.
Yeah, man.
Stoked to have you on because it's an angle of World Cup racing I don't really know a whole lot about, and I'm sure most people don't. Yeah. But I mean, maybe just run through kind of, I know you've been doing stuff with Common Saw as far as athlete and team management for a little bit, but was this the first year you guys were a UCI team?
Yeah, this is the first year for it. And I've been with the brand since 2018 now. And we've kind of had like smaller junior programs that was kind of already involved, you know, or set in stone whenever I got with the company. And then when I came on like working for them, it was something that, you know, it was pretty good then, but I saw the potential that it could be. And just to help that the North American, you know, World Cup scene just keep growing. And, you know, I feel we have this, like the athletes are here, you know, every few years we have this kind of wave of racers coming through. And again, I just wanted to kind of keep building that up. And then it was kind of the junior cartel team then. And then I kind of downsized it to the, like the junior World Cup team. Mm-hmm. And that one, which Austin was about, involved in. And then, but I wasn't able to go over to all the World Cups with them. I just had other things going on that I wasn't able to. And then, just kind of last year approached Max Commensal and my main boss, Stefan, kind of letting him know we have this opportunity to do something really cool to make a North American program. We have the roster to do it. And I just kind of need the support and financials to make it happen. And they gave the okay. And I actually went to a lot of my personal sponsors, like Olens, Industry 9, a few other ones, and kind of gave them the concept of what I wanted to do. And like, surprisingly, everyone like said, hell yeah, that'd be awesome. Let's do it. And it kind of went from there, honestly.
Dang. That's sweet. I probably should have mentioned that you yourself race for a number of years and still ride, and race some. But that's cool to hear that, you know, and I mean, some of your sponsors, I'm sure, overlap with what Commensal works with for some OEM stuff too. So kind of all makes sense. Like, why wouldn't they come together on something like that?
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of the brands that I was personally working with also works with Commensal on, just like you said, on an OEM side. Mm-hmm. So that was actually part of even some of the sponsors for the team. They're like, all right, well, let's kind of, you know, maybe bump up here a little bit on the OEM side, and we'll give you this for the program. So I was like, okay, like it works. It goes both ways. So it worked out really well.
Next thing you know, you're a product manager. You didn't even plan on it.
Yeah. And here we are right now. I'm running a warehouse in the back, product manager, all sorts of stuff.
Heck yeah. That's sweet. Well, can you talk about maybe like what it's like when you want to start a team with the UCI? And like, I mean, I know there's costs involved, and like, what does it take to kind of, that's like what a trade team is, right? Like when you're a registered UCI team.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, more or less. So, I mean, thankfully for me, I had, you know, obviously, as you guys know, Commensal has a good amount of teams, like UCI teams. So I was able to get in touch with some of those team managers of even like Commensal 100%, you know, Thibaut Rufinovit, the Muckoff team, and a few other teams, and just kind of get some insight from them. And more or less, honestly, it was pretty simple. Just got the correct contacts at UCI, emailed them, let them know the roster, what we were wanting to do. And they basically just said, okay, cool. Here's the form. Pay the team dues and you guys are good to go. So honestly, in that room, it was honestly like pretty easily to get like the official title of UCI team. Obviously, we don't have the UCI elite teams. That's for the factory teams. But just having that UCI team, because with like, say, like Dylan Maples and Riley Miller, who didn't have their UCI points currently, Riley, you know, first year junior, and Dylan going into first year elite, they didn't have their, you know, the UCI points to just go and register. They would have to go through USAC. So that was a huge help, having that UCI title. Is they didn't have to do that. I just registered them for every event straight through. There was no petitioning or anything like that.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Do you, does that give you the option to add other riders if you wanted to, like another Dylan Maples, for example, who doesn't have the points? Could you just add people to the team?
So that's something that's being worked on by UCI right now. So it's kind of, we've had this conversation before with a few other guys, and it was in a way kind of like how Supercross is, like the, you know, you have the factory teams, and say if, you know, a rider is hurt, then they're able to sub in another rider from another team, and they race on that bike under that team. You aren't able to do that with downhill just yet. So unfortunately, like, we aren't able to do that. And like, kind of once you set your team at the start of the year, that's kind of, it is what it is, type of thing there. I can offer them support. You know, I can give them a bike to race on or help them out everything outside of UCI, but they would still have to go petition, say with, if they're an American, with USAC, if they didn't have their points to come and race.
Got you. That makes sense.
Yeah. So hopefully, honestly, I think I said, hopefully that changes and, it goes kind of more into that maybe side at how Supercross and motocross is on that, but I don't know. We'll see.
You can't get Jason on a test bike and send him out there for a bike.
That'd be a cool story. You know,
get to train and do it. This is your time.
Commensal murders editor.
Jason's arm buckle.
Yeah, that's my loophole to get in right there. I don't want it, actually. Thank you, though.
Offer's on the table, dude. Just let me know. We'll talk after this.
I have a question for you. You guys are, like, I would say, like, a medium, small team, right?
Like, yes, yeah.
You have media small. People and you have mechanics and stuff. How many people are actually involved in, like, the team of, like, this size? Like, riders, mechanics, staff, media?
Yeah, so... It's obviously three riders, Austin Dooley, Dylan Maples, Riley Miller. And I only had budget for one mechanic. That's like sole job and mechanic to come with. And then it's just me. It's just us five basically. And we did have a good amount of help from their, so in Commensal out of Andorra, they travel around to all the World Cups and they have the, it's a race support area. So basically any privateer under Commensal can go there and they have, you know, lounge area and food. They usually bring one to two mechanics from the office to help them out on the mechanic side of things. So they took care of our structure again, since flying back and forth, feasibly we weren't able to do that. Like, props to Nico Malali for doing all that. It's insane. A lot of respect for that dude. So they took care of the structure and everything. So on that side, they had a big help with that, but all the travel, logistics, bookings, registries, sponsors, everything, I was a one-man show on all that side.
Man.
a lot. But in a way, like, it taught me I'm glad I did it solo. I will say, one person in the U.S. office helped me out on some of the booking, just helping finding like the cheapest, best flights possible. I will say that part, but everything else, like, I'm glad I just kind of threw myself into it because I learned so much very quickly. Cause usually when I go over there, I'm just managing myself, or once I get over there, you know, with the team or whatever, everything else is taken care of. But again, having to manage everything for five people from, again, the flights, the rental cars, like, little did I know, you can rarely find a van that'll fit five to six people with gear. So I would have to go to the airport, rent a tiny little car, me and the mechanic drive like 20, 30 minutes to an off-site place, get a van, drive it back to the airport, pick everyone up, and then drive however many hours to each venue. So just like that little part was like, freaking A, dude, this is so stressful. It's so much. Like, just to get rental cars, like, dude, this is insane. And obviously the language barrier, like, I don't speak any other languages, just English. And so that was tough sometimes, but it was all like, again, it was a big learning experience and I loved it, man. It was cool.
Yeah. That's sweet. Yeah. I mean, shoot, it's a lot. And then even if you're not racing, right. But managing it, that's, I was talking about herding cats earlier before we started. That is some serious cat herding.
Yeah, that's when I replied to you. I was like, I feel you. Yeah. And then just like the mental side too, like making sure, even if like shit's hitting the fan, which it definitely did a few times, but it's just like trying to stay as calm as possible to make sure the racers stay in the best mindset they can. And if something happens, and if if anything, again, little thing happens that happens to be a big deal, it's just like trying to, again, stay as calm as possible and letting them know, like, dude, everything's fine. Just don't worry about it. Everything's cool. Then I leave them and I'm just like, oh crap, dude. Like, literally, like, we don't have bikes, or like bikes aren't showing up or something like that. So I don't know.
So, yeah. I can only imagine. What, during a typical World Cup race weekend, what are you like the most focused and busy on? I mean, I'm sure that's pretty broad, but like, you know, what kind of like different things are you doing on like a practice day, qualifying, race day?
So usually we'll arrive on site about, you know, Sunday, Monday at the latest. And then Tuesday is usually setup day. So I will go with the Commensal race support guys. I'll help them set up the whole tent structure, mechanic area, all that stuff. And thankfully, like, they had, you know, trail bikes and stuff like that for the riders to ride. So obviously athletes will go for a trail ride, get loosened up. And then Wednesday track walk, I'll go out there with them, work with them on that. And I would say, like, from my years of racing, that's something that in a way I think every either team manager, or if you don't have that experience racing, having that on track analysis guy, knowing like how the track develops and how it's going to develop is really important. So come Thursday, you know, first day of practice or Friday, I'm on track usually from 8:45 because Riley's first year junior, so she's B practice. So I'll be on track from like 8:30, 8:45 all the way to the ends of like time training sometimes. Sending videos to the, you know, to the three riders. We have a group chat that we all have. And I'm sending them videos, how sections are, you know, running, timing, developing. So that's usually what practice days look like. And usually the same thing for like qualifying morning. I'm on track again, just seeing how things are running. And then finals day, I chill at the bottom and just kind of there making sure food's at the tent. Everyone needs what they need. Everyone has water. Austin has his sandwich stuff. Dylan has his, he's vegetarian, so he has to have vegetarian stuff. And same with Riley. So yeah, it's a lot of little things. They have to have sparkling water. They won't drink normal water. They have to have sparkling water.
LaCroix is ruining our youth.
Yeah. It is, man. Even like when like going up for warm-ups and everything, like right before qualies or finals, Austin just has a big old bottle of just fizzy water. I'm like, you know what, like normal water? He just says, no, I don't drink that. That stuff's dust. I was like, that's why he says, that stuff's dust. It's like, all right, dude, you do you.
I want seems to be working.
Yeah. I was like, hey, like that's what I told him. I was like, hey, it's working for you, so I am not going to say anything.
Yeah. I rip half of a Coke before every race run, so can't say a lot.
It's true. I think everybody, most racers have something on race day, right?
Yeah.
Having raced a lot in the past, do you get more stressed out on a race weekend as a racer, as a team manager?
Honestly, like I would say it's pretty equal. Maybe even more now because I have, it's not just me that I'm worried about. I have like three athletes that I'm, you know, worried about. And like at US Open, that was my first race I've done in, I don't know, a long time. And I was like, okay, this is what it feels like again. Like this is, you know, and, but you know, I would say, especially over there, like come, I mean, race time, it's with any, as you, I mean, all you guys have raced as well. It's definitely, you know, high stress moments. But I think one, if you have a good week leading up to it, you've done everything correctly, you know, you've done all the prep you possibly can, then that definitely takes a lot of stress off. You know, if the bike's working good, athletes feeling good, or if they've had a bunch of either mechanicals or crashes during practice, that definitely stresses me out a lot. but yeah, I mean, I've definitely like brought on the nickname like Team Dad, and I definitely feel like a full-on dad mode at races now because I'm just like watching all the kids, you know, they're good, making sure they're fed and everything. So
we're gonna see a clip of you trackside screaming it at them as they ride by and practice.
He's like throwing rocks,
kicking bikes over.
Old moto dad is yelling at their kid if they don't win.
I got one for you. As a former racer, spending so much time on the side of the track at the World Cups and in the U.S., what is the biggest thing you've learned as a racer and as a team manager spending so much time at the World Cups? Like, well, either on the track or just like overall for the racers performing over there versus in the States.
Yeah. I would say like all the tracks in Europe, obviously that's much more steeper and technical, more so technical terrain than what we have here in the States. So the tracks just get absolutely blown out. And so it's like being on the side of the track, a lot of it is kind of predicting how the track is going to be come quali and race day. And that's one thing, like when during track walk, like we were able to kind of pick that out as best as we can. So I would say learning that part of it, being on the side of the track for every World Cup and just seeing like, the, you know, the different soils, how it holds up or how it deteriorates, you know, if the rain comes in, learning that side of it a little bit more so, because I was always like on the track riding, then you can only see kind of so much whenever you're practicing, and especially World Cups, like your practice is, it's very limited. So you have to work really quick. So I think having to work very efficiently and very quickly is something that I've learned from like racing and managing the team now. Cause when you get one full day practice, a little morning practice and straight into qualies, and I mean, as you know, if you aren't a protected rider, that you have to treat that as almost the finals day just to make it into finals. So, yeah, again, kind of going back to the making sure as much prep as we possibly can do is done and making sure everyone's just in a good mindset. We have what we need. If, you know, we have the spare wheel sets and crates, you know, it's like so many little things go wrong. Cause if it's going to break, it's going to break at a race. Cause obviously you're riding much harder than usual. So, I would say just making sure, yeah, everything is organized. I'm try to be as organized as I can. So, yeah, just being very intricate, organized, I think leads into good results at the end of the week.
Do you spend a lot of time predicting the future?
Every day.
He's living in the future.
Yeah.
But seriously though, like at a World Cup, when it rains, you're like looking at every spot where it's wet, where it's dry. You're like, the light's like this at 3 o'clock in time training, that's what my race run's going to be like.
Yep.
You know, if it does rain in time training, you got to get up there, do your run in case it does it in the, so the course conditions change so much at a World Cup. I feel like I could be up to speed for a race run in the US on the fourth lap just because the tracks don't change just due to the gradient.
Exactly.
And the amount of fast wheels that come down it. So spending so much time on the side of the track at a World Cup on these rough tracks, what can you say the big difference? So you were at the Tennessee National, you were at the US Open.
Yep.
You spend a lot of time watching professionals versus amateurs. What do you see in amateur racers and professional racers, and what do you try to coach to your riders on your team, like for as far as riding goes?
Yeah, as far as riding goes, it's like one thing I've really learned is I would say, like, especially at like the Nationals here in the States, US Open, Windrock, go to like a few Northwest Cups just to, you know, be there, see the scene and everything. A lot of amateurs, they just see two pieces of tape and they're just going to ride through it. They don't really start diagnosing the track and really think about their braking points, their pedaling points, really setting up this section to make you faster in the next section. Even though it may be a little slower here, it's going to make you exit quicker, you know, and that starts adding up. So one thing that I teach to juniors is really start like tape. Yeah, it is two pieces of tape, but in a way, it's almost like a science project. You have to start diagnosing it section by section and really start learning it as much as you possibly can. If you need to do two track walks throughout the week, okay, cool. Like do two track walks throughout the week after practice and come after you're done practicing and watch the pros come through there. Watch how they diagnose each section and watch where they're hitting. As well as telling them too, like don't try to get too fancy as well. Because a lot of times it's, you know, they like, even by the end of the track, I'm like, they're looking at these crazy gaps, pulling here, pulling there. I'm like, dude, you are going to be absolutely smoked by the time you get here. Like, and like, I know how much you train and ride. Like, I don't, like, you just need to be worried about holding on to the bars by the time you get here, man. like, just pray and you're going to hold on. So that's one big thing. So just don't try to get too fancy with it, but being able to put down consistent, smooth runs, not forgetting what's going on, watch your GoPro footage so you know each corner and remember it. Find your points of basically remembrance on every section. So,
you know, you said you took a break from racing into the US Open a couple of weeks back. Did you feel like you could apply any of that stuff you've kind of learned from being a manager or, you know, a team coach and all that?
I definitely do, for sure. I mean, it was cool being back into that race atmosphere, you know, being in practice and, you know, seeing how fast Dakota was going and how slow I was going. I was like, that was really cool. this is sick. But no, I definitely think I do, even just like far as the diagnosing the trail a bit more. And I mean, and as you pointed out, Dakota, earlier, like how flat that track was at US Open, but it was a tricky track. Cause like, if you mess up one corner after it's so flat, so all your momentum is completely ruined. And instead of, you know, say at Val d'Isle, you make a big mistake, you hop on, you coast a little bit, you're like back up to speed. Track is so steep. So it was really like, you really had to be on point at US Open. And it was fun, man. Like I had a hell of a time. I qualified, I think I was like 11th or 12th or something like that. And then caught a little slick route up top in finals in that rain bit. But yeah, it was fun. Definitely had a good time while I was there.
I mean, I'm getting down towards the end of my notes here. The last thing I have is basically like, what's your off season look like as you prep for 2023? What are you focused on the next few months?
I would say right now it's, you know, kind of sponsorship season for next year. I mean, even at Val de Sol and Worlds, we were already kind of having meetings with, you know, certain brands and athletes and riders for next year. So that's my main focus here, at the moment. And then, yeah, just trying to be as honored as we can, especially right now in the industry. It's, you have to be so early on everything, on even from parts orders and frame orders. And I mean, everything, just cause I mean, it's the delays we're still seeing, production delays, delivery delays, all that stuff. So just making sure everything's set in stone with him, you know, dialed in for next year. We're here within the next couple of weeks. And then I still kind of take care of everything else on the, like the US side, as far as the, like the marketing campaigns go, you know, social media, other US athletes that we have, Kyle, DJ, Garrett Meacham, a bunch of other racers that we have. So I'm, you know, renewing contracts, all that stuff, and planning for next year with them on media projects. So if you guys know anyone looking for a job at Comensal, we definitely need we need some help. So
I'll post a job link in the description.
Yeah, job hiring. But yeah, no, and as well as just try to have some fun, man. Like, you know, we're over and I was over in Europe for a lot this year, and hang out here, do some fun local trips, go down to Angel Fire, go see the family down in Texas. Have a new niece that I haven't been able to meet yet, so go see them, and yeah, just kind of have a little me time, I would say.
Rad. Heck yeah. Yeah. Well deserved after a yeah. long summer traveling. So,
yeah.
One thing I just thought of, do you guys plan to grow the team at all for next year and add more riders?
So that's one thing that's, I mean, a few things are changing. A few things are staying the same. It's really trying to figure out the more logistical side of running a full, like, North American program, to where I have someone based out of maybe like the Andorra office that is linked with our team, that drives, you know, the truck, the trailer, has our, you know, spare bikes over there, everything. So that's what I'm trying to work out. So yeah, a few things are definitely changing. A few things stay the same. And I think we're kind of going into this period of kind of those buyers with Americans. I think the next, like, freaking like Asa Vermette, that kid, Cash Healy, and a few other guys that will be first year junior here in 2 years. I really want to start, you know, looking again for that next generation to start working with them and stuff. So but yeah, answering your question, it's yeah, some things staying the same, some things changing. So everything will be hopefully released here soon. So
I like it. Yeah. It's a little political, but you know, keeps it.
Exactly. Always got to keep the people thinking.
Hell yeah. I mean, shoot, you guys got any more questions?
Should we ask
oh, the budget one?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you're about to roast him.
Dude, no. This would be like if someone was going to go do a World Cup season.
Yep.
Oh.
A single person, let's just take the team out of it. A single person, a rough budget, how much do you think it would cost?
Do they have sponsors or no? Do they get,
let's just say, like, they have a bike. Like, they have a bike, they just need to get there, pay for racing, food, lodging, travel.
I mean, there's different ways you can do it. If you want to do it, I would say really well, to be, you know, comfortable and not kind of bumming around, even for flights alone and everything, I would say around 15 to 20K on kind of the low end, on the way prices are getting now. It's kind of a realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you too, man. Sorry. yeah. And then, but a lot of riders that I know, like, they're, and even some of the, like, the juniors and, like, called first year elites, like, they just kind of combine in with other riders and families that go, and they're able to make it much more affordable, and they, you know, go in on rental cars together, rental vans. I would just say the main thing is take extra parts. Even if you have to charge like an extra bag, just take extra parts, because once you're over there, it is hard to find anything if you need it last minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. I mean, dude, I think I did all my World Cups with one extra set of wheels, and I just crossed my fingers I did a lot of race runs with some cracked rear wheels, that's for sure.
Yeah, run what you brung, dude. Sometimes you have to. One set of tires, one set of wheels.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. My race set of wheels become practice, or race tires become practice tires the next weekend.
Sometimes you're riding dry conditions on mud tires.
You got to do what you got to do, you know?
Yeah. Dude, that's honestly one thing I found out is so that makes our gear bags and like parts bags so expensive is just going over there with all the tires. Like I was literally like packing my carry on like backpack and carry on bag just with spare tires to bring over there. They weigh so much, and I was like, oh, we're not about to get hit with another overweight fee. Like, all right, yeah. How many tires do I have to just like strap to my bag to where I can go through this thing?
Yeah, dude, I do not miss that. I know you see, I mean, you mentioned Nico earlier, but some of his posts this year of like an easy up stuffed in a box and like all this stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, like how many people do you have to like ask to help you walk through the airport at that point? You have so many bags and so much crap.
Yeah. Just finding strangers in the security line. Like, hey man, you mind taking this like derailleur with you real quick, or this tire, like set of handlebars. That's cool, right?
I got a serious question. Actually, I'm flying today. Do you think I can carry on a set of handlebars?
No. No.
To be honest, I don't know, because I've flown with a full-blown drivetrain and everything, and obviously like they have metal on them, pedals, cranks. I had cranks in my carry-on one time this year. Those all went through, so maybe I don't know. That's definitely more of a weaponish looking thing than a derailleur. So
you're like, it's a personal item.
I get
one carry on, one personal item. I know the pedals one, I fly with pedals all the time to press camps, and I've never gotten hassled for it. And I'm like, bro, I could literally tear someone up with these with flat pedals. Like,
oh yeah,
this is a certified weapon right here.
For sure.
All right. Well, we need to see if we can get Austin Dooley on. He's currently on vacation in Whistler. Lucky guy. But, Dylan, I'll probably let you go, but, thank you for joining us, man. That was sweet. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you.
Absolutely. No, thanks for having me. And who knows, maybe we'll do another one in the future.
Dude, for sure. Yeah. I'll keep you in the loop.
Sick.
Sweet, dude. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Sweet.
Later.
Dooley has probably left to go do laps at this point.
I mean, we're not that far behind, believe it or not.
You just told me early, so I'd be on time.
I appreciate that. Dylan just jumped off. Now we have Austin Dooley on, who has ridden for Dylan's team the past 2 years, right? Is that correct?
I've been with Colin Saul. 2022 was my third year with him.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well.
Yeah, I've been with him for a bit.
Heck yeah, man. Well, first off, thank you for joining us. You're currently on vacation in Whistler, so taking time away from jump laps, we do appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on, boys.
For sure. Super stoked for you. Freaking epic season, and I had a great time this whole year just getting to cover your season. I mean, a bit of a turnaround, I would say, maybe from your first season elite. You definitely grew a lot after your first year. So huge congrats, obviously. Maybe just to kick this off, like, what if you look back to like the start of the season, did you expect yourself to kind of have the season you did, or did you maybe exceed the goals you had?
I would say coming into the season, I set my goals based off 2021, and I was like, all right, I had pretty much two big goals for the year, and that was I wanted to get my first top 20, and then I wanted to focus on the consistency and try to get that top 30 overall. And I ended up 31st in the overall with not qualifying in Val d'Isole due to a mechanical. So I felt like I was kind of where I wanted to be all year. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's what I'm super stoked on, like, set the goals for what I wanted to do and pretty much was right there. Just missed that top 30 by 7 points.
Yeah, that I was looking at the overall results last night, and I was like, oh, man, because you were like, I think you were 29th the round before and then dropped to 31st. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I went into Vatasol 29th, and I was like, all right. Like, and I went into qualifying. Like, I went up with the air pressure. I was like, all right, let's be safe. Like, make it in. And then, yeah, broke the wheel. And from then I was like, oh, like right away I was like, no, like that's going to be top 30 overall gone. So it's all good. It happens to the best. I mean, everyone has some issues, so
yeah,
can't be too down on it. And still an insane season, so pretty excited just for the off season and then for next year.
Totally, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a odd way to end the year, but like you're saying, it's still was a sick season.
Yeah,
I mean, with this being your second year elite, and I know you did races as a junior, but that was like the COVID year, right? When it was one of them was a COVID year, but like, you know, I guess my point being with you going to some of these venues a few times, do you think that played a part in kind of having some better results? Just, we always talk about experience at World Cups being so huge.
Yeah, I feel like for sure it's the experience that you have. It's not just riding the track before. It's just you get more familiar with going over to Europe because it's so different over there than the U.S. And I think that takes some time to get used to how everything works with just the way they live their life. And, I mean, of course, jet lag, all that. And the tracks are way different than Southern California and anything in the U.S. So just going over there more and more and just getting more familiar with the terrain and everything, I feel like that's the experience that I took and was able to, that's why I had a better year, I think, just more experience in that way.
Yeah, for sure. What was it, I'm sure it was a huge benefit having Dylan over there and that kind of whole team aspect, but, you know, like, your years past when you were going over to Europe, were you pretty much on your own, or did you have a mechanic, like?
Yeah, never had a mechanic from my junior years and then first year elite, I was the mechanic pretty much. And then, yeah, this year having Miles as the mechanic and like Dylan up there on track getting videos and just a team environment was a big thing for me to excel, especially the mechanic, because when it comes to my bike, I'm pretty picky with things and just very particular with the bike. So having someone where I was not so stressed about, oh, I need to have this done or I need to bleed the brake, and just kind of hand the bike to Miles and be like, hey, can you please do this? And then for me to be able to like, oh, I could go watch a GoPro or eat or whatever and then go back up and do practice, it's just like, that was a insane help this year.
Yeah, dude, I'm sure. I bet. What's one thing you're picky with your bike setup?
I would say the thing I'm most crazy about is the brakes. Like, if they're, the bite has to be perfect, and I know, like, I was pretty annoying with that, I'm sure, this year with, like, Miles. He would do a bleed, and I'd be like, oh, like, can we bleed him again or do something? They feel a little off, but he was so sick. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, no worries, I'll do it. And then every time he got it, I was like, yeah, it's perfect.
I love that. Dude, how much time did you spend in Europe, like, this summer? Because you weren't bouncing back and forth too much, were you? You were kind of doing longer stints over there?
Yeah. I just counted last week, and it was 89 days total in Europe. So day under the 90. But, yeah, I was there from Fort Bill to Andorra.
Wow.
And stayed there. Went to Schladming between Fort Bill and Leogang, and then went to Morzine after Innsbruck in between that and Lenzerheide. So did the longer trips.
Austin.
Yo.
With that being said, so I got to watch your season a lot. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations. I think the consistency that you had and the speed that you had this season was very impressive. That was super cool to watch from my end, because I know how hard it is to do that week in and week out and be on it every week on all these various different kinds of tracks. So I got to watch you at Windrock at the beginning of the season, and you're one of the few dudes that I know. Obviously, a lot of this comes from maybe some mentorship that you've got from Charlie, you know, doing laps in Southern California, you know, where you like sprint into the track, ride laps at race pace. So I got to watch you do that here. Like, you're one of the few dudes I know that will go do eight laps and six, eight laps and pedal every lap like it's a race run. So you got to do that here. You went to Europe, got some consistency, spent some time at Schladming on a fast, rough track with super high speed with a good gradient. How would you say that your preparation coming into the season helped you with that consistency on the World Cup tracks? Now, I know at the end of the season you said you really wanted to push at events like the World Championship, and it seemed like maybe when you did try to push, you maybe like had some issues with wanting it to feel faster than what it was. So the racing this season, your preparation, how do you think that helped you?
The prep going into the season was, yeah, really good this year, obviously, going out to Windrock for 2 months. I think for me, it's just doing, like you said, those kind of trying to implement a race lap during practice, doing the full runs, trying to get in the headset or the mindset of going just like fast, pushing like you can. And I think that's what did it for me. But yeah, like you said, those end of the races were hard. Like, I know you were saying, like, oh, like, just give it, like, a little more, see what happens. And I felt like, yeah, like, Leger. I was like, that was a fast run, and it's 23rd. It's like, oh, man, like, I felt like I pushed harder than I felt, and then it was not anything special.
Would you say that consistency of, like, so I'm sure you did the same thing at Schladming you did here, and I know you spent some time in Morzine and such. Would you say that you kind of found, like, that race run feeling, like where it's not necessarily you're not fighting it, but you're just going fast? Like, what makes you have a good result? You had kind of found the recipe for that.
Yeah, I think from doing all that time in Schladming, Windrock, Morzine, doing the timed runs, it was like the race runs weren't like I was comfortable, like on the bike, I didn't feel out of control or anything like that, which I think that's kind of what builds that consistency of just staying on the bike, trying to minimize mistakes. It's getting comfortable with riding the edge. And I think going into the future, I just need to get more comfortable with riding, just push the edge more and more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something even I've kind of struggled with this season. With, like, I found it where I can consistently get, you know, a top 15 and break into the top 10. But when I really try to, like, push...
Yeah.
To go that next level, like fight for a podium or, you know, just want to give it a little bit extra. Sometimes I'll give it a little too much or I'll actually go slower because I've made a mistake or things like that.
Yeah.
So do you feel that like as you get more runs and more time under your belt, you'll be able to understand more like what a top 20, what a top 10 will feel like and how to kind of do that if you think you're capable of it?
Yeah, I think so. I think, just taking what I learned from each year. And I kind of had a similar prep. No, I didn't go to Windrock, obviously, but going into 2021, I learned the whole thing about timing the runs and treating practice like a race. And I think that's what made me excel in 2021 and then did the same, but took what I learned then into 22. And so hopefully doing that again, going into next year, will be able to help me just break into the top 20 a little more often than I did this year.
And I think that'll happen too, just with like, you know, you're pretty young. So as you get more runs under your belt, get stronger, get overall more, a greater depth of fitness, I think that feeling will start to be the same. You'll just go faster. Like you're that feeling you have in a race run where it's like you're consistent, you're like not making mistakes, you're riding good. I think you'll start to see that go from a 30th to 25th to 20 to 15. The next thing, you know what I mean? You have a lot of years left in your career, so you should be able to, you know, fight at the very, very top of the sport, I believe, based upon what I've seen from your work ethic. But, yeah, I thought it was really cool to see, like, how your preparation was and then see how consistent you were. It's like when I watch you train and I watch you kind of do your thing, it's pretty cool to just see the whole thing come to fruition. Obviously there's going to be growing pains there just like anyone else, but it was really cool to watch.
Oh, thanks, I appreciate it, Dak. Means a lot from you.
All right, I got a question for you. I'm on the old Roots and Rain right now doing the Austin Dooley versus Dante Silva battle here.
I knew that was what
and
you were
anyone saying. Who followed World Cups and racing for like honestly the past 2 years, it looks like, I mean, and really, I mean, you guys have grown up together,
yeah,
racing and stuff, but, you know, dude, they show you the difference in time between you guys for events, and most of the events you guys are less than 1% difference in time. And do you guys even practice together at this point anymore? Do you still talk to each other? Like, are you telling him you're going left when you're really going right in a section?
No, we still practice together and we still talk. Like, I don't know if you saw the clip of Leger. He went down and then I just absolutely just went down, slid straight into him. So
Team USA sticks together.
It's crazy though. Like last year especially, like we would practice, I think, every race together. And we continuously went, like, he would go 70th, I would go 71st. Next week, I would be 40th, he'd be 41st. It was insane. Like, I don't understand how it's even possible. And then this year as well, like, we were still really close.
Yeah. No, it's sweet to see. It's funny because I will look for one of your guys' names on a result sheet and then just start looking around for the other one. And they're always right by each other.
Yeah, it's sick, though. Like, I've never seen that where they're always so close. Every race, like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's crazy.
Oh, man. All right, Austin. We've got a real hard-hitting question right now. So do you think following me in Santa Barbara helped or hurt your 2021 season?
Oh, it definitely had to help.
See?
Like, following you, I mean, I was pushing to keep up.
I doubt that, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
Dude, that was a sick trip, though. Let's do it again this offseason.
Yeah, for like you were first year elite that year. They did a 10,000 foot day climbing with like 40 miles or something like that. And you know, you don't really see the downhillers of that age doing that. So, props to you guys.
Big day out there, but I think we got to go back and do 11 now.
Yeah,
we got to up it.
Well, we'll get Dakota and Jason too.
Yeah, we'll go get some e-bikes from Intense. Yeah,
e-bikes will run out of battery.
Yeah, that's what backpacks are for.
Dude, the only thing I climb 10K on is my moto.
Moto and a plane. I don't know if you've seen in some of our other podcasts or heard, but the nickname Unruly Dually has been floating around, and I need to know from the source if you like that nickname.
Another name?
If you prefer we don't use it. How do you feel about that one?
I would say I think it's fine.
All right.
I think I've listened to probably every podcast with you boys, and yeah, like, I'm tuning in.
All right.
I think it's... Yeah,
no way, he's a listener.
Oh, I'm a listener.
Dude, you and Dylan both. That's two more listeners than we knew we had before today.
I didn't know people listened. Do you think I'm full of shit, Dooley?
Why? What?
Do you believe my race reports are good?
I think you boys are great.
Thank you.
I enjoy listening.
All right, well, I'm going to ask you another question then. Coming out of this race season, what are the big things you feel like you need to work on in the off season here? Like, what are you stoked to do? What are you excited to have the time to do when you're off the downhill bike, both in training and in life? What do you got planned for the off season?
I would say the two biggest points I need to get better with is strength and fitness. I think those are kind of two things I really need to work on, especially the strength side. I love riding the bike, feel like that's all good, but I feel like I need to just get a little more into the training and get stronger, fitter, which hopefully will bring me to that next level. Like, I've really noticed the more you go faster on these tracks, it gets harder and harder. And I think, you look at you boys, you guys are all so strong. So definitely think, try to dial that in this off season and hopefully see how that helps us next year.
Yeah, I definitely think that maybe I'm not as strong as some of the dudes at the top of the sport, but, I mean, even me, I'm excited to have an off season just to do some of that small muscle group stuff. Like, I really find my back gets super sore when I ride a lot of downhill.
Yeah.
And I've had a bunch of x-rays taken, and because my hip, like, because I spend so much time in a split stance, my spine has actually curved, which causes back pain from my hips not being centered. So I'm really excited to have some time off to really work on getting some of those small muscle groups stronger, get my hips back in line, and I think that'll make a big difference coming into next year, just working on those small muscle groups. And of course, I think I need to bench a bit more. The old, I'm not strong enough, dude. It's like sometimes I hit these compressions and I just buckle.
Well, that assault, dude. You were just doing bench presses the whole way down. And that seemed to work out. You're flying there.
Dude, yeah. That was tough.
I think it'll be cool, too, like 9 months or whatever it is until the first round. You definitely got longer than usual to work on some things, and like you said, it's the smaller things that you're excited to work on. And I think when you, the more you get towards that front end of the group, it's all the little tiny things that start to make a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, you guys spend a lot of time fine-tuning bike setup. It's the same thing with your bodies, right? You know, everyone's you both are fit, but it's the little things you want to work on. Do you have non-bike related things planned for the next few months now that racing's concluded?
No, not too much. Ride the moto a bit, which will be sweet. Pretty excited for that. And yeah, nothing much.
Hell yeah.
Just riding the bike and riding the moto and just getting back to training.
Yeah. Dakota, that's... with your back, I forgot to say, have Jeff just weld you up some like 100 mil cranks while he's making your bikes, or just some pads.
I need to get Jeff to could have put a couple of gussets on my back. Oh, that's funny. Dooley, are you excited to have some time to test the new bike? I know you got to run it the second half of the season there. Are you excited to have some time to get that thing good and dialed in?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for that. I actually haven't ridden this bike much, not outside the tape. I think I did 2 days in Morzine, and I believe that's all I've ridden the bike that wasn't at a race. So this is my third day on it. That's, I guess, at a bike park, and it's definitely a different environment because it's hard at a race. Like, you're so focused on everything with the race, but now when you're not racing, I can focus a little more on how the bike's going and try some different things that I want to do this off season. So I feel like I had a good bike setup with the time I had on it, but I think I could probably try to make it even better.
Heck yeah. Are you going to stay in SoCal a lot this winter, or going to go a few other places?
I think I'll stay in SoCal for a bit, but definitely go a few different places. Went to Windrock last offseason for 2 months, and maybe that was a bit too long, especially...
Maybe you got here early.
Windrock in January is a bit icy, I would say. A bit sketchy, useless. So probably, I definitely still want to go back there, maybe for like 3 weeks or so. So we'll see when the national date comes out and work around that. And maybe go up to Squamish. We spent, went there for a week, rode with Jackson for a bit, and the stuff there is insane. So
yeah,
I don't know, try to get away from SoCal too, because it gets pretty tiresome riding the exact same trail week in and day in and day out. So
yeah, it's a lot
to keep it fresh.
A lot of effort to do downhill laps in SoCal, that's for sure.
We'll be doing it.
Yeah.
Will you be taking time off your downhill bike after riding jumps for a week, Dooley?
For sure. I think so. But yeah, I'll take some time off and then we'll get back into it. How long are you gonna take off, you think? Are you gonna you'll take a bit off, huh?
Yeah, I remember you were here fully doing downhill runs last year, and I had not even pumped the tires up on my downhill bike from the previous year yet.
Yeah.
So I think that I'll take quite a bit of time off. This is the first time in my career where it hasn't just been like 2 months and then I've switched teams, or like the season started early. We had one random super early race. So yeah, I'm going to take quite a bit of time off just because I feel like in 6 years of racing, I haven't really done a lot of things for myself. Like, I've passed up on a lot of those outside of life things that you give up to race, you know, when you have like a structured training program and such. So dude, I'm gonna ride my dirt bike quite a bit, I think, and other than that, you know, spend some time at home in Michigan, ride some skate parks, something that I don't normally get to do a lot of. Just do that kind of, man, I might even go to a baseball game. Yeah. Just the stuff you don't normally get to.
You're going to a baseball game. We're in the playoffs now.
Well, maybe not baseball, but maybe I'll foosball. Maybe I'll go to a Vols game.
Yeah.
We're gonna hit all kinds of skate parks when you finally come out here.
Yeah.
We'll have to
get Dooley on the program.
You ride.
I think we've lost him.
Is it Austin Peace out?
He's like,
dude, oh, he's back.
All right.
He was trying to pee.
No, the way I have my plan for my data, I only get a certain amount of day, so I ran out of that data, but we're reloaded in. We're good to go.
All right. Well, hey, we were just wrapping up that when Dakota comes out here, we'll have to all link up and go ride and do some fun stuff. Yeah. So,
how's the house coming along, Dak? How's that 15K treatment for the house?
Well, I got hit. The podcast world already knows, but I got hit with a $12,000 labor bill for siding. Oh. So that 15K is going to go quick.
Straight to that.
Dude, straight to Freddie, the Hardy installer.
I was excited to see the mod you were going to do with 15K.
I'll post a clip on my Instagram later. I bought a freestyle kicker.
Okay.
So I'm building it into my pump tracker. Yeah, I swear to God. Full on metal, 8.5 foot metal militia Deegan ramp.
Perfect.
So I'm currently actually building a landing for it with a skid steer behind my house to hit
Did
it on
my
Does
that come
tracks.
With the black Dickies shorts, or do you have to buy those separately?
I got studs in my visor as we speak.
He's gonna be riding down the track with the spikes on his chest protector next year.
Came with black plastics.
Dude, I gotta put black plastics on now. So I'm hoping Dooley will come hit it with me in the off season. Come over, ride some 110s. He stiffed me last year, but
I'll be there.
I think he's gonna show up this season.
Yep, we'll be there. Well, a bit later though.
Austin, you rip on a moto, don't you? Like, I've definitely seen clips. Like, you know your way around a dirt bike.
Yeah, I can get around the track. I used to race for, like, 5 years. So, and then take a bunch of time off. So, I know how to get around, but I'm not too fast.
All right. Well, that's good. It's good for me to know so that if you ever invite me, I'm not going to come. Because I have no business going with you. Maybe I'll hop on a pit bike. With some Vans on and just run the risk of blowing out an ankle.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm down for some pit bikes.
Yeah. I know the more we talk about bugging Dakota to come out here after his 15K winnings, the more I think we should just have him fly us out to him. To fly us out to Windrock.
Yeah.
We'll help with the siding.
The ticket.
Yeah. There you go.
Bro, you guys help with the siding, I will fly you here. Come out
it's not
for a
really
week.
My to-do list, but.
But I mean, hey, you never know when you're going to need to learn to install Hardy. Dude, a little concrete dust is good for the lungs. It really helps you race fast, I think.
Clears them out.
Yeah.
Have you rode any trail other than Dirt Merchant's A-Line, Dooley?
This is day one, but we've ridden a few other things, but the main focus. Dirt Merch at the A-Line with a little bit of crab apple in there. I think those are the three trails of the week.
Will you be riding D1 at all? Freight train to D1?
We were just talking about that. We got to go do some Garbo laps after lunch. We got to go do D1.
Perfect.
I'm so jealous. How long are you in Whistler for?
7 days of riding, so today's just the start.
Yes.
And you said you drove up there?
Yeah, I drove up with old Pinky. Tyler
Stinkerton.
Irvin. Yeah, Stinkerton, Tyler, Irvin, Colin McKelly, and I know you boys know this name, Evan Medcalf.
Oh, we need to get him on.
You know,
elusive.
This podcast is already running long, but maybe we do another one of these next week and I'll pull those fools on. Because it's good to hear Evan Medcalf is a real person and exists, because Dakota never interviewed him. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, those boys. If you got all four of those boys on, that'd be a loose podcast, especially with Pinkerton.
Let's do it.
Word.
Well, let's let this man ride some D1.
I know. I feel pretty messed up keeping you from riding Whistler. So, thank you for joining us, dude. And again, nice work this season. Super, super happy for you.
Yeah. Thank you, Austin. Congrats on the season.
Well, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, boys. Keep up the good work. We do. I think everyone appreciates the pods and enjoys them. So just keep it all up.
Hell yeah. Stoked on it.
Sweet.
All right. Sweet, dude.
Cool, man.
Sweet. Have fun, man.
See you, boys. Later, buddy. Thanks for having me on. See ya.
Heck yeah.
All right. Man. Well, I just want to throw it out there. For our first time trying to have other people call in, I mean, I don't know if it actually uploaded yet, but it didn't go the worst. So,
yeah.
Shout out to Austin and Dylan for taking the time to do that. I appreciate it. And, I mean, it's the first time doing that was a bit of a trial run. I have, like, we have a whole list of people I want to chat with this offseason that'll kind of be fun to mix it up. And, yeah, it should be good. That's super funny that he's with, like, I kind of feel bad now that he's with, like, a bunch of other Groms that are, in my mind, Groms, other yeah, dudes we should be
they're
talking
Groms. They're Groms.
They're Groms. Well, I mean, we're almost, you're in the 30 club. You're almost there. I'm right behind you guys. We are washed up.
Oh, man, yeah.
Dakota's got a real stern face yeah. right now.
Dude, I'm vet class. I race vet class.
Dude, you could quit racing, wait a year, and then do Masters Worlds.
That's damn. That's yeah, that's something. I'm gonna try to win the real worlds before I go for Masters Worlds. So,
are you tapping your desk? Is that noise?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just, dude. I was slapping the chair. Honestly, I was. Getting frustrated.
All right, so we got a world champs win, and then you're going to Supercross, and then back for vet worlds. Sounds good,
dude. Pit bike nationals. I want to race the shout out to where's Pulp. I want to race Pit Bike of Nations next year. The fact that I was not invited, I'm not happy with. I want to pull up for team Puerto Rico, Villapoto, Carson Brown. I don't know who the other dude was.
Willie Brown? Browning?
No, Carson Brown, BBR guy.
Yeah, but Willie was on the year before that they won. Yeah.
I'm not sure. But dude, I've been drinking Coors Light and I'm RV me and RV two are about to I'm ready to go.
Listen, he's off the Pacificos. He's onto the Coors Lights.
Don't say that. Hey, if anybody's listening from Pacifico Beer, I'm open for a sponsorship.
Dude,
yeah,
that is an easy email to send.
Is it?
We can get you in there.
I mean, Pacifico would be cool, but you should go the route of like, dude, like Fat Tire. Fat Tire is super down with bikes. Or I guess, yeah, Fat Tire's New Belgium.
Yeah, there's Pacifico their sponsored the X Games.
I think that's actually a good reason why maybe they aren't the option.
He's got you're just X ramp.
That's true, but you're just Dak Norton, you know. And so we love you, but
Red Bull. What about NOS energy drink?
No, that's not what I'm not talking about energy. I'm not talking about,
just talking about a nice buzz.
I just want Pacifico. It's in my cooler.
Dude, off season, all season. Let's go.
Let's go.
That's you saying that you were drinking beers before race weekend at US Opens, the most B practice podcast thing I've heard you say all year.
Dude, the morning of seating, I woke up with a headache. I was like, I'm hungover.
Remember that year at Snowshoe, out on the balcony in the rainstorm?
Oh,
dude.
Above the village.
You know, it's never cool to talk up how much you may have partied at races.
Did not help our racing.
But I will say those are some of the most fun times we've had, and it's a reason that you know, we're not on the other side of the podcast being interviewed by somebody. It's part of the reason.
Well, I will say that there is a balance to all these things, and I'm probably one of the few downhill dudes that actually talks about like drinking beer and grilling and, you know, that kind of stuff.
But
I've definitely not been known to be the most straight laced of the downhill dudes, but yeah, man, it's all about balance. I was like, you know, after Val de Sol, I felt like I was stoked. My season capped it off all good. And then I'm like, man, I got to go to another race. So I wanted to keep it like light vibes all weekend, hang out, have fun, like just go there and have fun and not try to forget that we were there to race for a bunch of money. And that creates a lot of extra pressure you don't need. So we definitely had a loose weekend.
Yeah. No, it's good to live a little. All right. Well,
sweet. Well, that was fun.
That was fun. Thanks for joining as always.
Yeah, boys. Thank you. It was good. Thanks for listening, guys. It's pretty cool to see this thing like gain a little bit of traction, and people are coming up to me stoked.
I think the podcast needs a coffee sponsor.
Coffee sponsor would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I could do this thing buzzed.
That's one. any type of buzz, Dakota's cool with it. Okay, I'm hanging up this call. Be Practice Podcast out for this week.
Later, nerds.